Chapter 8. Even though Ruth drove a big blue Oldsmobile and the ladies were not without transportation, they'd talked Lexi into driving them over to Susan's house the next day. Lexi hadn't resisted much. She wanted to hear what the woman had to say herself, not to mention that she wasn't exactly sure that it was safe or legal for Ruth to drive. On the way over, she told them about Jack's visit to the house and how he'd noticed the stain on the patio, as well as the research he'd done on the Pendletons' finances and the identity of the assistant. "I knew Jack wouldn't let us down," Nan said. "It's great that he's helping us out on the sly. But since he can't do anything officially, I think it's up to us to find the evidence to nail Rupert." "And to find my drone," Ida chimed in from the back seat. "I figured he wouldn't be able to look into their financials," Ruth said. "So last night, I went to the community center to watch Wheel of Fortune. You know, Mildred Dowse always watches it on the big screen in there on Fridays." Nan swung around in her seat. "And Mildred still works at the bank." "Yes, she does. And when I happened to just casually mention the Pendletons, she told me that Rupert had come in every other Tuesday and gotten a whopper of a cashier's check." Ruth lowered her voice. "She's not supposed to tell anyone specifics about people's banking, but Mildred and I go way back."
"How much?" Nance asked.
$10,000.
"Well, that certainly is interesting," Ida said. "I wonder what he would need that for. Maybe he's buying property or something?"
"My bet is on the or something," Nan said.
"This case is shaping up. We have more research to do on Connie Davis and those mysterious cashier's checks," Helen said.
"Yeah, but maybe after we talk to Susan, we can head back over to the Pendletons. I have the controller in my new purse," Ida persisted.
"Maybe, Ida, but the research is of the utmost importance. We have to get all the information and clues together before we make an incorrect assumption. Kingsley mentioned a maid, and we are not sure if the other woman he saw was this Connie person or a maid. Susan could be a totally innocent party, but I hope whatever she tells us today will shed some light on this situation," Nan said.
"That's the house, number 17.
Ruth pushed her face into the front seat of Lexi's car as she pointed toward a small blue ranch-style home. Lexi pulled over to the curb. The neighborhood was modest. The houses probably built about 25 or 30 years ago. Well kept up, but not rich by any means.
"You think that's Susan's house?"
Nance frowned at her smartphone, where she'd used her GPS app to guide Lexi to the address they'd Googled earlier.
"I guess it is. She sure doesn't live the high life like her sister."
"That's what Kingsley said." Ruth pulled the lever on the back seat and tried to push it up, even while Nance was still sitting in it.
"What are you waiting for? Let's go question her and see if we can trip her up."
Nance popped the door open, then got out and pushed the seat up for Ruth.
"Now, Ruth, this isn't an interrogation. We have to speak to her gently."
"Maybe if we'd brought some pastries, it would have broken the ice," Ida suggested.
"You're just saying that because you wanted to eat some on the way over," Nan said.
"I still don't know what you're going to ask her, and the pastries are always a good excuse to start a conversation. No one ever turns away old ladies with pastries," Ida said.
"It's easy. I'm going to tell her that Helen here is doing a piece in a paper on what it's like to be the sister of a famous author."
Helen had been a journalist her entire life, and now that she was retired, She worked part-time for the local paper. Her contacts at the paper came in handy, as did the excuse that she was working on an article. Anyone who got suspicious could check that she really worked there, but the paper would never verify exactly on what. And if anyone got too nosy or demanded to know when the article would be printed, Helen simply told them it had been cancelled.
"That sounds like it really would make a good article. Maybe I'll actually write that," Helen said as Nance knocked on the door.
They stood lined up on the stoop, waiting for Susan to answer. When no one came, Nance knocked again. Ida shaded her eyes and looked through the window at the side of the door.
"Darn it, just our luck. She must not be home."
"Where do you think she could be?" Ruth asked.
"Probably with Rupert, now that Olive is out of the way."
Ida wiggled her eyebrows mischievously.
"All the better for snooping around."
Ida hopped off the steps and sidled past the bushes, pressing her face right up to the big picture window.
"What do you see?"
Helen asked as she skirted the hedge, angling her body sideways to move in beside Ida.
"Nothing much. Looks like a regular living room to me."
"Maybe we can see more through one of the other rooms."
Nance walked around to the side of the house.
"And the neighbors won't be able to see us snooping over here."
They followed Nance, peeking in the windows of a room which must have been the spare bedroom. A white quilt lay on the bed. The walls were cream-colored, and a blue and white area rug covered honey-colored hardwood floors. A little white bureau sat against one wall, and on top of it were dozens of pictures of a little black dog.
"Oh, that must be her precious Peek-a-Poo," Helen said. "Isn't that sweet? She has pictures of him."
"No pictures of the son, though," Nance observed.
"Kingsley said they were estranged, so maybe she doesn't keep pictures of him out."
"Too painful," Ruth said. "I wonder how long they've been on the outs."
They moved on to the next window. This one must have been the master bedroom, as it featured a queen-size bed with a colorful comforter. The room was neat as a pin. On the opposite wall was a low dresser with a TV on top. The closet door was slightly ajar, and some clothes were laid out at the foot of the bed.
"She sure is different from the sister. Everything's in its place. Of course, that makes sense. If she was a librarian, that's what you found online, Ruth, right?"
Helen asked.
"That's right. She's retired now, though. Looks like she has enough money to live comfortably, but doesn't spend it frivolously like the Pendletons."
"I'm surprised, with all that family money, that she lives in this tiny little ranch," Ruth said as they went around the other side of the house and peeked in the doorway to the kitchen. Like the rest of the house, it was neatly apportioned. A modest kitchen table sat in the eat-in kitchen, sheer curtains on the windows. It was serviceable and clean, but looked like it hadn't been updated in several years.
"Maybe she likes the security of having the money. Or maybe they didn't inherit as much as we're thinking," Nan said.
"Even if she did have a lot, that doesn't mean she wants to spend it all. Look at Myrna Hastings. She's a millionaire, but lives like she's on Social Security," Ruth pointed out.
"Well, one thing's for sure. She doesn't have much to hide," Nan said as they came back around to the front. "There was nothing online that indicated anything out of the norm. She was married, had a son, worked in the library."
"Boring," Ida said.
"Hardly the type of person that would have an affair with her brother-in-law," Lexi added.
"Ha! Those are the type that usually do. All those repressed emotions or something."
Ida peeked into the side door to the garage.
"Her car's not here."
"Well, I wouldn't expect it to be if she didn't answer the door."
Nan squinted toward the end of the driveway.
She must have been here at some point, because the mailbox flag is up. Oh, goody. Ida rubbed her hands together and rushed down to the mailbox. Let's see what she's sending out. Maybe it's a love letter to Rupert.
Ida flipped the door open and reached her hand in, then pulled it back out, a small square letter clutched between her fingers. The envelope was a thick, cream-colored paper. The address on the front was neatly done in black pen.
It's addressed to Brent Chambers, 121 Forest Avenue, Oakdale, Kentucky, Ida said.
Brent, why does that name sound familiar? Ruth asked.
I think that's the name of her son. Isn't that what Kingsley said? Nance asked.
Yes, it was. I remember distinctly, Lexi answered.
So, it looks like she was sending a letter to the son.
Helen's eyes got misty.
I hope she's trying to reconcile with him. I can't imagine what it would be like to be estranged from my son.
Well, that's nice, Ida said. But it doesn't help us with the investigation. And if we don't get a move on to get my drone back, I'm going to be the one that's estranged from my grandson.
This might give us another lead, Nan said.
But he lives all the way in Kentucky, and he hasn't been in touch with his mother. I doubt he knows anything that's going on.
Ida looked disgusted. A movement at the end of the street caught Lexi's eye, and she glanced down to see the mail truck. Nan's must have seen it too, because she said in a hushed voice,
"Put that back in the mailbox, Ida. The mailman is coming."
"Yeah, it's a federal offense to tamper with the mail," Helen said.
"I wasn't tampering, I was just looking."
Ida held the letter out to the mailman.
"Susan wanted to make sure this got mailed."
The mailman accepted it with a nod, then passed a pile of mail to Ida, which she stuffed into the box as the others started back to the car.
"At least we know Susan was home earlier today. Otherwise, our mailbox would have been full," Nan said.
"And we know she wants to reach out to the son," Ruth added. "But the question is, does that have something to do with her sister's murder?"
Helen asked.
"Time will tell."
Nan's turned to Ida.
"For now, I say we take a drive over to the Pendleton place and see if we can dig up the drone. I don't think Rupert knows about it, so it's gotta still be out there in the yard with the incriminating video. If we can find the video, then we'll be home free."
"And if we can't?" Ruth asked.
"Then it looks like we have a lot more research to do."